Switching gears now, we wanted to remember a civil rights leader who fought for the full participation of African Americans in American life. Lawrence Guyot died late last month from a heart ailment. He was 73 years old. He was a native of Mississippi and one of the founding members of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC. He spoke with my colleague Debbie Elliott in 2010 about SNCC and their work.
We organized people from the prostitutes to the preachers. We turned this fight into their fight. We were not about developing membership. We were about going into towns, working with people, getting them involved in action, finding out who the local leaders were, supporting them. And only when there was a movement established there did we move on.
But Guyot paid a personal price for his activism. Once when he went to bail out fellow activists in jail, he was stripped naked, beaten, and tortured for hours by a group of 9 police officers. But that did not deter him from a lifelong involvement in civil rights. Eleanor Holmes Norton is one of the people who worked alongside Guyot. She now represents the District of Columbia in the U.S. House of Representatives, and she's with us today to share some of her memories of Lawrence Guyot. Congresswoman Norton, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, of course, Michelle.
I understand that you met Lawrence Guyot shortly after this terrible incident that I just described. Do you remember it?
Oh, I do. Unforgettable. In the belly of the beast, I met him. Because when I arrived in the Delta in Greenwood, Mississippi, there was nobody there but a group of teenagers, because that's what the movement was in Mississippi. The rest of the South had been, as we said in SNCC, opened up, but not Mississippi. And Guyot had gone to get Fannie Lou Hamer out of jail, who had the nerve to use the restroom in Interstate Commerce off of a bus, a Greyhound bus. And I learned that he had been put in jail. I had just arrived. I hadn't been there 12 hours. I just questioned all the teenagers, and they told me that the police chief in Greenwood, where we were, at least didn't parade around with the white citizens' councils. I went over to see him. I told him my name was Eleanor Catherine Holmes. I was from Washington, D.C. I went to Yale Law School. I called everybody. Guyot had gone over to get people out of jail. I couldn't just sit here. Would he call the police chief so that I could get in to see Guyot and, please, don't put me in jail, too. What's the point? Went over. When I met Guyot, when I say in the belly of the beast, he couldn't come out to see me immediately because he had no clothes on. He had been beat so badly that clothes hurt him. He finally put something around him, and I came face to face with one of the bravest men in the entire civil rights movement.
You once called him one of the unsung heroes of the movement. Why did you say that? What did you mean by that?
Well, unsung heroes, for example, many left the South after a while, you know, as the movement crested. Guyot stayed. When you heard that clip, you heard the authentic voice of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the organizers who went in, worked with the people, didn't do anything unless they brought the people with them. Before he came north, he was the chair of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party that in 64 challenged the all-white exclusionary Mississippi Democrats. And for that, he will be forever remembered, because that broke open what had then been exclusionary practices in both the Democratic and the Republican parties. And 4 years after that, that is real revolution.
How do you think he maintained his sense of joy? I know, I think you hear in his voice a kind of a buoyancy. What was the key to his ability to keep at it in the face of what you were just talking about?
A spirit of unadulterated defiance. This is a man who was raised in Pass Christian, Mississippi, when you're supposed to move off the street when a white man moves down the street. And that defiance gave him courage and made it possible for him to be one of a handful of leaders in the Mississippi. I mean handful. The sit-ins were led by Medgar Evers. He was the first state champion of the NAACP, and here we're talking about the 1960s. There was nobody in the Delta, the worst of America, except a few young people. And Guyot was a leader, one of the few leaders of that band of youngsters. And then, of course, look at Mississippi today. I mean, it has more black elected officials than any state in the union.
How are you going to remember Lawrence Guyot?
I'm going to remember Lawrence Guyot in my fight for statehood. That this is a man who didn't give up when they were beating him virtually to death. And if, you know, if that kind of man can give you inspiration, you might even get statehood for the District of Columbia.
Eleanor Holmes Norton represents the District of Columbia in the U.S. Congress. As she alluded to, that means that she can vote in committee but not on the floor, and she's engaged in an ongoing fight to win full voting rights or statehood for the District of Columbia. Congresswoman Norton, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Michelle.
And one more quick word about a story touching on civil rights. Last week we told you about Pullman Porter Blues. That's a new play about the experiences of African-American train porters who worked for the Pullman Company from the late 1800s until the 1960s and played their own quiet role in advancing the dignity and rights of all people. After that conversation, we got a note from musician Lee Jones. He told us about his experience with some of the last Pullman porters just after he got married. Here he is.
My new bride and I arrived at the Fulton, Kentucky Amtrak waiting area, which was a trailer, at 2 or 3 in the morning after having flown from Bowling Green, Kentucky in a four-seater single-engine plane through a nasty storm, complete with navigational gear going bad along the way. The city of New Orleans eventually rolled in, and I asked the porter, since we were clearly newlyweds, if we could get hold of a bottle of champagne. And he shook his head and said, "Sorry, boss. Club car is closed." Later, we were getting comfortable in our room, and there was a quiet knock on the door. And I opened it, and nobody was there, but he had left us a bucket of ice and two Bud Lights. Pretty sure he broke into his private stash for that. So these days, before I perform the city of New Orleans, I generally spin that tale. It was such a sweet moment. I'll never forget that guy.
Well, I'm riding on this train. Feel that mighty engine moan.
Thank you, Lee. And you are hearing a bit of that song, City of New Orleans, now.
I cried when I tried to tell her I loved her. I never saw her again. No, 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 no.
And, of course, remember, at Tell Me More, the conversation never ends. To tell us more, you can visit us online at npr.org/tellmemore. Please remember to leave us your name. We're on Twitter. Just look for Tell Me More NPR.
Down through Osaka, my grandmother's home. Ah, goodbye, Grandma, goodbye. Yeah.